Extravaganza.
Hello and welcome back to the Horror Pop Extravaganza. This is episode 23. I am Pops Ghostly, and with me as always is
Yawn Anus.
One more time for me.
Yawn Anus.
Yawn?
Yawn?
Yawn? Yawn? Yawn? Yawn?
Anus.
Okay. Anus. Yawn Anus.
Yawn Anus.
Beautiful. Welcome back, everybody.
Good this to
see you.
This
is that place where we bring the macabre to the mindful and have a lot of fun along the way, or at least try to pretend to. Who knows? Today, we're going back to the 80s.
Mm-mm-mm. Those delicious 80s.
Those delicious 80s. The further you get away from them, I'm like, fuck, if I couldn't have been like 25 years old in the 80s, I'd have been a cocaine-fueled money-making maniac, dude. It would have been wild. So in the world of horror sequels, there are so many times what happens with horror sequels is it hits and nobody knew it was going to hit.
Right.
And you say, well, what the fuck do we do now? Now that we've got a property that, and this one though, didn't really, like the original didn't really hit. It was kind of an underground sleeper for a while. Nobody really, like it wasn't this huge box office success that Halloween would have a couple years later. But today we're going to go back to 1986. So it had been 13 years. Yes, that makes, or maybe 13 years since the original. To talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre part D.
Yes.
Yes, part two. Why don't you just put it all out there, dude? Lay it all out on the line. How did this thing get made? And I do get excited every time I watch this, though, because, man, Canon, when I was a kid, Canon films.
Yeah, dude.
Winners, dude. Like, yes. Fucking Cyborg, Break-In, Masters of the Universe. They just put out the craziest shit, and they did distribute this one. And you can see it all over this movie.
Absolutely, dude. This is a balls-to-the-wall sequel.
Dude, so yeah, we'll get there, but why don't you first lay it on us? How did this get made?
All right, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 from 1986, unrated, and at 1 hour and 41 minutes. All right, let's talk about who's in this thing. First off, I mean, if you're going to be like, who can we get for our sequel to really make it pop, some star power in there? Dennis Hopper, one of the most electrifying performers of all time.
No matter what he does, and I want to stop you right here for just a second, because the reason I had picked this movie is my current issue of Scream magazine that comes out of the UK had a whole segment on chainsaw sequels.
Oh.
They talked about Hopper in this being like barely phoning it in and shit. And I'm like, I thought he played the perfect for a Canon movie.
Yes.
He was the perfect Texas fucking Ranger, like disgruntled, retired, you know, been chasing his niece and nephew's killers and shit like that. Yeah. So yeah, I had to disagree with that one. I'm like, no, dude, I think he slays in this thing. It's fun.
Dennis Hopper never phoned it in, not even on Mario Brothers.
Right. You're right.
He always brought it. And maybe he's being Dennis Hopper, but he's not phoning it in.
Again, this was the cocaine-fueled 80s.
Yes.
And that was the other thing I was reading was about Jaws 3. And they were talking about Dennis Quaid. And he's like, there's not a scene in that movie I was not high on cocaine down in Florida. He's like, the whole. And then they had interviews with the other people from the crew. They're like, yeah, it was just snowing in that motherfucker. Doing rails of blow all over. I'm like, wow, okay. So that's how Jaws 3 became what it became.
You know, I see it now. Now I get Jaws 3.
Now it makes way more sense. Just do like an 8-ball and watch it. And it'll make total.
You'll be like, damn, that shark looks real as fuck, bro.
Better than the original. It's the best movie. Okay.
All right, continue. Going down the cast list. Carolina Williams playing Stretch.
So I want to stop you one more time as well and say that I do have an interview with her that I did for those movie guys that's super cool, dude. We talked for like an hour, and what? It's rad. And we talk a ton about this movie specifically, some of her other body of work. But yeah, if we ever want to just toss it back out, I'd love to.
We should totally get that out.
She's great. Like, she slays in this movie.
Yeah.
Having to follow Marilyn Burns with that truly like chaotic, lost your mind kind of a performance from, you know, being normal. And then at the end, you've completely gone batshit crazy. But Marilyn Burns in the original, you know, there's not a lot of blood and shit like that. In this one, it is from second one gore fest. Yeah. Oh, and we'll get there. Continue. We'll get there. My favorite stuff.
Jim Sydow.
I believe the only original returning cast member from the first one.
What a kook this guy is. Like, as soon as he's on screen.
But he is in the first one, if you remember as well, when he's at the gas station and after he beats up Sally, he's like, oh, forgot to turn the lights off, the fucking cost of electricity will put a man out of business. And it, so it seems like his character is the same, fueled on cocaine. It's amped up to turn it up to 11.
The one and only Bill Moseley as Chop Top. Like, wow. What a performance.
This is where, you know, I don't think we would have Otis Driftwood had it not been for Chop Top. And interestingly enough, he would go on to play the Jim Sydow character in the remake at the beginning. Not the remake, but one of the I want to say the Alexandra Daddario one.
Oh, where yeah.
Bill Moseley plays Drayton Sawyer, and I'm like, dude, that's cool. Like, you got to be with Sydow, and he even does that little gotta make that dollar, you know, he does the impression pretty good. But yeah, Bill Moseley steals every bit of scenery that he's in this movie.
Now, he scares the shit out of me. He's one of those people to me that in real life is probably a little bit cooked out.
The nicest dude. You've when met I him? Met him, yeah, so I met him not too long ago, and I drew up a flash sheet, four different images. I drew one Chop Top, one of his, he played Johnny in the 1990 Night of the Living Dead. So I got that one on there, an Otis Driftwood. And there was one more, I can't remember, but took him a copy of it and he signed one for me. I was like, yo, dude, can you sign this? I'm gonna hang it up in my booth and shit. But he's a real, like, you know, he's a small guy. He's just a real timid guy. And I was like, I brought one for you. I was like, if you would like it, you know, you've just inspired me in so many ways. Like, these characters, Chop Top, Otis, have driven my art and driven creative thinking in a way. And you bring something that I wish this dude would have had a way bigger career. Like, he's always been in that horror camp, but I feel like he's got the chops, dude, to do a bunch of different crazy shit. And in this one, though, when you just let him off the chain, it's so much fun.
Yeah,
so
it is nuts. I did hear a funny story about him when he was doing Devil's Rejects, and he was doing the scene where he had to stick the gun down the girl's underwear, and he just like stopped and turned to Rob Zombie and was like, man, this is really dark, Rob, this is bumming me out.
Yeah, dude, I mean, he has, yeah, and when you, and everybody should listen to his band. So this was during the writer's strike when I met him. So they couldn't sell any licensed, like anything from the movies at their table. It could be next to them, but he had CDs on his own table. And I'm like, what is this, dude? And he's like, oh, it's fucking, gee, you like weird shit? And I'm like, what? And it's called the Corn Bugs, or just Corn Bugs. And they put out a few albums, but he's got Buckethead playing guitar on it, which is dope. He's got a song on there called Dirty Sperm Rag. So gross, but so hilarious at the same time. It's like Otis Driftwood made an album. I don't know.
Wow. It's fun. So everybody go out and pick that up.
Yeah. Or you can find it. I know I put it all on my Apple Music and shit. It'll come on the radio and people will be like, what the fuck? And every once in a while, though, someone will say, is that Bill Moseley? Because you can hear it. Right. Not really singing, you know. It's more kind of a talk singing thing and you hear his voice.
Wow. Bill Johnson stepped behind the Leatherface in this one. How do you feel about that?
We'll get into that when we talk this story. I think some of this Leatherface is in the writing. Some of the weirdness that I have with this Leatherface, but we'll get there.
And I mean, it really doesn't get anywhere from there. A lot of names with no pictures on the cast list. Yeah.
A lot of people probably in Texas, you know, wherever they were filming, locals trying to do thing. I do like the guy that plays LG, Hawk and the Luger.
LG pop back up somewhere, like in a Rob Zombie thing or something.
Probably. I hope so. Yeah.
Directed by Tobe Hooper. You know, who can complain there? The guy's talented as fuck. Strange, though, because of the tonal shift in this movie.
And I have read a few times he wanted the original to be more comedic.
Okay.
This is one of those instances where them having no money and no ability to do a bunch of gore and stuff served the final product so well in that original. And it was hot. They were fucking miserable. Like, it's all there. Gunner couldn't wash his clothes. You know, they said that motherfucker smelled so bad, dude, because they couldn't wash it and reapply the stains and stuff. They're like, we don't have, what do we, I don't know. It's just... out there in 110 degree heat running around all day in these same clothes, and they said it was just like the whole set just smelled because he had all that butchered meat brought in and shit.
Gross.
Like 100 pounds of butchered meat just starts going rancid. Like, that's gonna be terrible.
yeah Are you ready to hear what this movie's about?
Give me with that.
They really summed it up here. A radio host is victimized by the cannibal family as a former Texas marshal hunts them.
That's so weak.
That's pretty weak.
That's so weak. Damn, dude. That's bad. I wonder if some of these people only watch the trailers, because I did watch the trailer for this. It popped up after because I watched it again last night, and it came on after my iTunes or whatever ran all the way through. And the trailer wasn't super intense. It's like maybe 45 seconds, and 30 of those seconds are just chainsaw blade, you know, with shiny. And you thought it was over. Fucking Texas is bad again. And then you get a couple shots of the Texas Ranger. So I wonder if they were just like, yo, this girl works at the radio. Fuck you, dude. Give me your job. I'll do it on the side for free. These movies are about. So we open up exactly how we do in the original. A credit roll crawl, if you will, talking about the events of 74. Sally was the only one who made it out. They found her. She screamed about a cannibal family and then went catatonic. Everybody else was missing. There's been reports of, you know, shit going on all over Texas for the past 13 years. No family was ever found. Nobody was ever found. Hence, it could still be going on. We jumped, though, in that original, we had the creepy music and the camera, like,
right.
You know, and like the fucking bloody text and shit kind of like floating over. And I want to say we even got some cuts of a slaughterhouse, maybe some steer or some stuff. This jumps into like 80s synth pop, like we're going. This is a different, like you said, tonally radical departure from the first one.
Right.
Radical departure from the first one, but still somehow has elements when they come up on the screen. I was even talking to Shayna. I was building Optimus Prime out of Legos, and I was watching the movie at the same time. Talking to Shane, I'm like, some of this shit still is. And it's like, I look up and I'm like, yeah, that's still fucking uncomfortable, dude. Oh, and did we mention, because Tom Savini did all the effects on this.
We did not mention that, but yeah.
That's where this movie shines. Like, the effects are so, so good. And so this came out in 86, so we had been quite a few years past the original. Horror had taken that shift with Friday the 13th. We had already had A Nightmare on Elm Street. We've had, by 86, we're into Friday the 13th, probably five something, you know, right. Because they were just bang, bang, bang year after year. And so the audience is in it for the splatter. These are becoming popcorn movies as opposed to takes on politics or consumerism, you know, with Romero and all the stuff that people were trying to say. This is like, let's go and have a really good time. And that's what we do. We jump right into these two dudes driving, and the one guy's got these awesome glasses.
Those like Spencer's hologram glasses. Yeah, dude.
Glasses. They've got the first version of the car phone, and they are just shooting signs and shit. We're in the Wild West. They're just driving. He's got a hand cannon.
They're on cocaine, obviously.
They've got to be on blow. There's no way these guys aren't on blow.
Because you're right. 80s dicks. There's I loved the 80s dicks, dude. They were such good bad guys.
They really were. Like in Revenge of the Nerds and shit. You know, the preppy rich dude who was just an asshole. So these two call into Stretch's radio station, and this is where we meet Caroline Williams. Hey, we're going to the big game. Everything is set behind this big game that's going on. This big football game is our big set piece. And so these two decide, again, cocaine fueled, to play chicken with, they're like, let's fucking fuck with this farmer.
Yeah, in Texas. Like,
and they're hitting the horn. They're like, oh. So they, farmer has to turn off the road. They're still super excited. Stretch wants them off the air. They end up calling back in later at night, and they're still on their way to the big game and bright lights and big titties. That's what we want to see, or that's what we want to hear or see. I don't know. So they're crossing a bridge, maybe the same bridge from the Lost Boys, because it looked, it's so narrow.
Yeah. It's,
they're crossing this bridge. Oh, no, that was a train bridge, trestle, whatever, in the Lost Boys. And the truck is, there's a truck in the road. It lights up big lights all over the place. And they're like, get the fuck out of the way, fucker. Like, are you crazy? And they're going to take some shots at him. The truck pulls over to the side, messing with him. Whoever is driving this truck in reverse
is a badass, dude.
Dude, killing it. So they're riding now. Our boys in the Mercedes are going straight. The truck's in reverse, but they're side by side. And out of the bed of the truck, we see Nubbins. And as a kid, this always confused me because I wasn't. And I watched it on VHS. You know, you didn't see the guy in the black
behind him. Yeah.
Holding the thing up. But we get this. Like dressed up in camo, shaking around, looks like the Crypt Keeper type character. And now they're really, what the fuck is going on? And this skeleton dude picks up a big ass chainsaw.
Yeah.
Starts racking on it. Brim, brim, brim. And they're like, holy shit. Meanwhile, the car phone is recording all of this. So Stretch is yelling, hang up, hang up, hang up, hang up. Get the fuck out the, like, what's going on? They're screaming. We get some cool death scenes. Our first real splatter where we know this is going to be a gore thing is our driver gets his head cut in half. And that shit's just flapping in half, squirting blood all
He's all like over. Trying to hold his brain in. He's like, ah.
But he's like, what the fuck? I can't remember if we see the buddy get killed or not, but the jump to the next morning and the car is on the side of the highway. All chewed up. This is where we meet Lefty, played by the great Dennis Hopper. He shows up, and the one deputy or something. So he's not official anymore. He's not a ranger or a marshal or whatever he was, because he went what everybody considers crazy trying to figure out what happened to Sally and Franklin, his right. nephew who was in the wheelchair from the original, and then Sally, who ended up making it out but becoming catatonic later on. He's there, and there's some line where he's like, oh, this is just an accident. And he's like, oh, yeah, just bad enough he cut his own fucking head off. He's like, yeah. And he's looking at the door. He sees the cut marks and things like that. He decides to put it in the paper. They say, what do you want us to do? He's like, just put something out there. Put something out there so somebody knows. They put it in the paper, and Stretch sees it in the paper and goes to Lefty and is like, hey, I've got this. Like, I've got the information. I know it. It was recorded. I heard them kids get killed. I'm tired of being a fucking regular spin of the mill DJ, and I want to do something more important. He's like, whatever. Get out of here. Get out of here.
He looks like flat out dog shit in this hotel room. Like, they caught Hopper early in the morning.
Cocaine fueled, like that was after a 4-day bender. Like, fuck, he's really dragging on that cigarette. Shit, man, what have I done with my life?
He's like, I was in Apocalypse Now.
You got to pay for this cocaine habit. I did read Michael Caine's book where he said he did Jaws 4 so he could buy his mom a new house, and I'm like, that's dope. I get that. Yeah. He was trashed. I don't care. He's like, my mom needed a new house, so I did Jaws 4. So she ends up leaving before he listens to the tape. And now we cut to the big chili cook-off between, you know, yeah. And this is where we see Jim Sidow again, returning as Drayton Sawyer from the original. And he has won two or three times. And during the chili cook-off, he wins again. She finds like a finger in it. And he's like, oh, them fucking hard shell peppercorns. Gotta get that out of there. It's all in the meat. It's in the meat. But his gig is he just has a mobile barbecue thing. And he's all about just making money. He really, he doesn't seem to care that they're butchering all kinds of people. Even in the original, though, he said he never really liked the killing part. He's right. Like, I'll really take no pleasure in the killing. But he's now won the competition, is heading back, and Stretch plays it on the radio. She plays it and say, hey, we got a special request. If it comes in, we have to play it.
What a setup this fucking Chili Boy has in his rig, dude. He's got one of the first cell phones, one of them big block fuckers. And then he's got a boom box, but with like bone attachments on it strapped to the hood.
And so he gets a phone call and it's the kids, which we haven't seen yet. We just know he gets a phone call. And he's like, I told you never to call me on this line, you coon shit motherfuckers. He's yelling at him the whole time, just calling him the worst things you can think of. And so they eventually convince him to turn on the radio. He turns on the radio and he hears what happens. He starts to tell them, this is all your fault. Like, you fucked up. How could you let this happen? We're going to figure it out. We jump to... He stops on the side of the road, and then we jump, I believe, to Stretch and Lefty in the evening, where, or LG, because LG is her producer, I would guess, or station manager. He's just somebody who hangs out up there with her and wants to go right. get coffee and stuff. And Lefty at this point had told her, like, play the thing and I'll come, you know, meet you. I'll make sure you're okay, because that's the thing, is make sure you're okay. And so... And we jump, the music shifts in this movie.
Oh, go my from, gosh, dude.
Dude, she'll be straight spinning a record to very heavy strings from Psycho. Or low bassy strings or some shit like that.
What was super crazy is that the first song that she's playing, she's kind of dancing to in her booth, is the song that got super popular when Wednesday came out because Ortega did that kooky dance to it. And it's that Goo Goo Pop song.
Okay. Sweet, though.
Yeah. I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, I'd never heard that song before Wednesday. Now I realize, like, they're paying homage to their origins.
That's sweet, though. She is dancing, and then they're going to, we're going off the air for the night. So everybody have a, in New York, it's still party time. But here in the heart of Texas, it's time to go to sleep. And... they shut everything down. It gets very quiet. LG might go to check the door.
He tries to fuck her, and she says no.
He asks her to go get coffee. He doesn't try to, like, fuck her. He doesn't become
over. It's the same thing in Texas, dude. And then he spits a big old loogie right on the floor, and it really grosses me out.
Yeah, spit stuff I've never been good with. And that one, he's gross.
Yeah, he's got really gross.
Got them big loogies. So... I can't, somehow they get separated and she goes out into the lobby and Chop Top is sitting there and he looks dressed as Sonny Bono. He's got a Sonny Bono wig, these glasses and a coat hanger in his hand that's all wired out to make a hook at one side, lighting that up with a lighter, and you hear it on his scalp. And he's spraying. You're like, what is going on, dude?
This is so disturbing, dude. If they were like, what could be the most disturbing thing? You come into a dark room and there's this fucking creepoid there and he's burning little chunks of his head off and then pulling them off the end of the coat hanger and eating them, dude. That's worse than boogers.
That's way worse than boogers.
I was appalled, dude. And I've seen this before and I was like, that's appalling.
And there's parts of this movie that are still so unsettling. And his character, though, the presentation of Chop Top is over the top. It's crazy. And we learned that somebody hit him in Vietnam. So I'm assuming he was in Vietnam during the first movie. And Sidow even says, I got to take care of all my brothers. Like, these are all his brothers. And he gets hit with the fucking, what did he say? Someone got him with a stick or a spike or something in his head. And he was at the VA hospital getting his metal plate, but he just has a huge metal plate.
Like a huge.
Yeah. And like how much?
Like the movie I want to see is the prequel of Chop Top in Nam.
Yeah. Oh, you're right, dude. You're right.
Yeah, dude.
And what that was like. So he starts talking to her about wanting to make a request. Oh, I know. She's like, we are fucking close. You need to get the fuck out of here. He's like, oh, but I want to make a request. That'll be great. Cool, man. And then he asks for a tour, and she is showing, here's the lamp. Here's the type.
There's the fucking door.
Or there's the X's sign. E-X-I-T. Exit. Burning, eating his fucking head. So good.
Dude, you were too good at that.
I've seen this movie quite a few times. And I told you, there's a lot of voices trapped in this. A lot of different characters. So he starts talking to her about the record vault. And he's like, oh, what's in there? That's the record vault. Oh, what was that one you were playing? Was that Rambo 3? He's like, and he's doing all this. She's like, get the fuck out of here. And this is where she starts to sell this really well. She plays that panicked fucking in. Lefty had told her they live on fear. They thrive on fear. So she's trying to combat the fear, but there is no combating this fear. And he says, what was that? The Rambo 3 soundtrack? And that's when Leatherface comes tearing ass out of the records vault.
And that's a great jump scare.
Dude, it's a good one. And hits Bill Moseley in his plate, though.
Yeah.
And that's where so much of the comedy in this starts up. And he's like, oh, Leatherface, you dog bitch. You motherfucker. Dog will hunt. Get her, Leather. Dog will hunt. And so Leatherface chases her. She gets behind a big metal door of some sort in some sort of vault or something like that. He's terrorizing it. LG shows back up. Chop Chop's beating him with a hammer like fucking incoming mail. It's brutal, man. You're just watching this dude's head get fucking caved in for a long time. Leatherface breaks his way through, and this is where I feel the biggest departure from the original is the hyper focus on Leatherface's horny dogginess. Right. This is a very, very disturbing sexual scene that is hard to explain. He comes in, starts slashing stuff up, and she's screaming at first. And she's like, wait, 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 wait. Are you good? And he's like, hey. You show me how good you are. And he starts caressing the inside of her thigh with the end of the chainsaw. Ugh. Fuck, this is uncomfortable. It's weird in like the weirdest way possible, but I do somewhat understand it because I've always made the argument that had Leatherface not been in that environment, he would have adapted to whatever he was. I feel like he's slow, like he's mentally underdeveloped.
Right.
And they just tell him what to do. They treat him almost like a dog, you know?
Well, and that was so the whole thing about the latest one that they did for Netflix. Like, they really showed that, like, out of that environment, Leatherface would have probably been fine.
He would have been okay. Now, how do I say this in the nicest way possible? Growing up, I had a friend who used to babysit someone with Down syndrome, and we'd go over and hang out and stuff like that. I have people in my family, people I've known. A lot of the dudes I've known with Downs are some horny dudes.
Right, right.
Like, they like boobies and shit. Like, it's
yeah.
What it is.
Who doesn't, dude? We would all act like that if we were, like, allowed. Like, we had to be, like, social and shit. We love boobies so much, and we'd be like, boobies.
But where I was trying to go is that it does make sense that he would have some kind of, you know, repressed sexuality that he's never even been able to explore. And this is probably the first time any woman or object of that sort of desire has been responsive in that way to Leatherface. But no matter what it is, it's fucking weird to watch. Because right before he leaves, he's like thrusting that fucking chainsaw, like right at his pecker. I mean, he's holding it right down there and just like doing these groin thrusts and almost has like this ejaculatory experience where he's like, he goes back out. Chop Top Scott LG and says, you know, you get that bitch, you get her, blah, 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 blah. And they take LG Bubba's like, and she follows them. She chases them down and is like, damn it, Lefty, you know, where were you? Because she saw that they took LG and she is trying to, I don't know, figure it out. This set piece where we land for the, you know, last 30, 40 minutes of this movie, it's a fucking dream set piece, dude.
Yeah, dude.
I hope they just found that old abandoned amusement park. And yeah, that's it.
It's so like the cave in Lost Boys.
Exactly. But maybe even better.
Oh, for sure better. Because it's like
slides and fucking, you know, huge towers you can climb up and all kinds of shit. But they end up out there where the family, we learn, has now been living. We've got Chop Top, Grandpa, Leatherface, and Drayton Sawyer are all down here. He's trying to get all the food ready for the big chili cook-off. She sees lights coming at her. She sees the tunnel where they went into. She sees these headlights coming. She stops. Lefty jumps out like, hey, little darling, it's me. Don't worry, I'm here. We've completely forgot to mention, though, the one of the most crazy scenes in this movie is him buying the chainsaws. Dude,
that was whack-a-doodle, dude. And I feel like they just gave Dennis Hopper some cash and were like, go in and buy some chainsaws.
And some cocaine. They're like, hit this rail real quick. So he walks into said chainsaw dispensary. And this old man is behind the counter on the phone arguing with somebody. I'll be with you in a minute. Hang on, hang on. Dennis Hopper doesn't say a fucking word through this whole thing. He goes in there, just nicely lays out like $1,000 in hundreds.
Yeah.
Leans him out real nice and taps it towards the guy and starts picking up different chainsaws, holding them, waving them around. The old man comes back and says, can I help you with something? And he just doesn't respond to it. Doesn't even look at
say a shit.
There's gas in them. You're fucking around. You want to try one? Go ahead. And this is where it goes bonkers because he goes outside with two little chainsaws, one big ass chainsaw, and just starts going medieval on this huge log they got out there.
Yeah, dude.
But it's the old man getting all excited about
He's
it
getting horny over it, dude. He's like, yeah.
This guy's going fucking nuts. I love it. I love it. So Dennis Hopper, Lefty, shows up. He starts talking to her and then just trap door opens up out of nowhere. Yeah. She fucking falls in. I don't know how that trap door was right there.
It's Scooby-Doo. Right.
It was very Scooby-Doo. Orange lights, nefarious lights coming up from the trap door. She falls in, gets stuck on some tree roots and things like that. He tries to get her out with a skeleton hand, maybe an arm. It was an arm and a hand. He's like, grab on, girl. And she tries, falls all the way down, lands in a shit pile. That's when Lefty's like, just goes running towards the beginning, like, I'm bringing it all down. I'm bringing this whole motherfucker down.
And that, again, that was Hopper, like, behind the scenes, like, talking about taking down the production.
Probably. I'm taking it all down. The director's like, fuck, this coke-fueled nightmare has been going on for 22 days. Gotta get out. No, Dennis Hopper is great. There's a really good old episode of The Twilight Zone with him in it young.
Really?
Plays a, in America, kind of like a Hitler youth, like he's modeling Hitler almost in a way. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So she falls down. He starts cutting his way in. We see the family down there trying to get the meat ready for the big game that's coming out. He's going to sell all kinds of chili because they've done, you know, three times in a row and it's the best thing ever. Leatherface, this is where I think it, for me, this is always the most uncomfortable. He cuts off LG's face. She's hiding in the corner in a puddle of muck and blood and body parts and things like that. And we don't see, we see Leatherface hacked over with a electric knife, right? But we don't see exactly what he's cutting off. And then we see him hold it up, you know, and you got the eyes and the mouth. And Sidow comes in. Leatherface somehow finds her. She kicks over a little metal pole or something. And so he ties her up with her hands behind her back, but then puts Lefty's face on her face. And there's the line where Caroline Williams is like, why is it wet? And that always, yeah, that always gets me, dude. Like, you barely hear it under her breath, but she's just shaking. Like, why is it, you know, getting another person's face put on your face with your hands tied behind your back so you can't remove said face from your face?
Wow.
That's tough, dude. Ugh. That's tough. And the effects, though, him walking around with no face on, hawking loogies, he's got huge parts of his, like, rib meat is missing, legs just shaved. He's just a walk-in. Oh, darling. And so now he's got this fucked up knife that he's trying to cut her thing off, and he's barely getting it. His arm's way up, and he can't come back down. She gets free, scurries away. LG is dead at this point because there's no coming back from that. Sidow wants the, he says something about like eyeball puree or some shit. And I'm just like, this really is just a nightmare.
Just gross.
It's a nightmare. And we can't underappreciate the sets of this thing.
Right.
Their kitchen space, all the little tunnels. When she's near the end running away from Chop Top through that corridor of like lamps and weird house shit all over. Super cool stuff. So she scurries away and the house starts kind of shaking. And they're like, oh, you boys are going to drive me out of fucking business, Leatherface. Because he blames him, thinking he was chopping the place up. Meanwhile, Dennis Hopper, Lefty, cuts a hole in the wall and all these guts just spill out. And he's like, this is the devil's playground and I am here as the Lamb of God. He's very righteous in all of this. I have seen my fear and I will fight my fear. But when he gets inside, he does find Franklin in right. the wheelchair. We see the skeleton in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't there for you, brother, but I'm here now. And we're going to bring it all down. Fuck. He is chopping everything down. He doesn't give a fuck. He's just cutting through walls, cutting through support beams. He's going to literally bring this place down on top of itself. Chop Top's running around playing Nom Land with Nubbins. He's got a fire extinguisher. Nom Land! Or gas, whatever. Sidow's trying to cook. Leatherface is just kind of there with them, and somebody sees her scurry away. And Sidow's like, what the fuck? We can't just have people in here running around, scurrying this way and that way. Go check it out, Leatherface. He starts chasing her. And it's not long, though, before they do catch her. They catch her at the end of that long hallway because they have the conversation Sidow does about sex or the saw. You can, sex, nobody understands, but the saw is family. So he's talking to Leatherface. They're going to bring her to dinner, and we get our iconic dinner scene, just like in the original, that we get in most of the Chainsaw movies. You right. will get a dinner scene with somebody tied to the table. Caroline Williams plays this so good, great scream queen, like just has the pipes for it, can fucking slay in that way. The set here is so much more intense than the original kitchen scene. Her chair is huge with bones everywhere. Tom Savini doing grandpa stuff. Grandpa is the other part of this that is extremely unsettling.
Always when he's grandpa. In that
fucking coat hanger, dude, like his old mouth.
Yeah.
Like, sick. Gross, grandpa. They're going to have some dinner and then bust her fucking head open, but they want grandpa to bust it. And then we get the throwback to grandpa being the best killer. They say he could do so many, which I did find interesting last night watching it. I never really saw the way they were painting the food industry at the time.
Right.
Where he's like just cattle crashed in together and sickness, you know, he really paints this picture of like, it's fucked up. Right. Like, you know, what you're watching is fucked up, but also what we're doing is fucked up at the same time.
Right.
She is going to get thunked in her head. Grandpa can't do it. He keeps holding the fucking hammer and dropping it like he does all the time. Snap, snap, snap. I want to say maybe Chop Top hits her, but it's sometime close to here where Lefty does show up. And they're like, he's like, who are you from the health department? I'm like, that's great, dude. He's got chainsaws hanging all over him. Two little ones. Make one a fucking cowboy hat.
Wouldn't that be amazing if that was how the health department showed up?
Coming to shut me down, honest businessman has finagled his way through. So now we've got a chainsaw fight between Leatherface and Lefty. Lefty gets side out. I think it's him. I don't think it was Leatherface. Gets him right in the asshole. And so he ends up under the kitchen table while Lefty and Leatherface are up top having this duel of the chainsaws. Like, you could put the Duel of the Fates music. It'd be awesome. They're up there fighting with chainsaws. At one point, Lefty shoves the huge chainsaw through Leatherface's guts, who continues to fight with a chainsaw hanging out of him with his chainsaw. And now Lefty's got one in each hand. Just like ting, 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 ting. And the meanwhile, Chop Top is chasing Stretch throughout the complex. And this is scary, too. Him chasing you like that. Fuck that, dude.
Yeah.
He's cutting her like calves and everything up with a razor blade. And just, yeah, in that sound, he's laughing the whole time. He almost looks like a spider when they're going up that staircase. Yeah. The way, very creepy. And Sidow is under the Drayton's under the table. Now he's like, where's that old fuck you, Charlie? And he's talking about hand grenade. So he's searching around on Nubbins for a grenade. Grandpa somehow gets out of his chair, has the hammer, throws it at Lefty, hits Leatherface right in the fucking head. He falls over. Grandpa falls over. And behind Mosley and Caroline Williams, we see a big explosion in the tunnel. So we assume that Leatherface, Lefty, and Lefty was like, ah! He was there for it. Like, he had over, you know, he had forged Dante's Inferno and made it out the other side. So they are going up this big stairway to what looks like an old lookout tower, a turret of some sorts. They get up in there and we see Grandma. Grandma is old as shit, dust and bones, holding this huge golden chainsaw. Sweet. Why not? Take us up.
It's here. Like a video game at this point.
Oh, I found the secret weapon. So she ends up snatching the chainsaw from Grandma, breaks her arms off, and he's like, you bitch, you killed Grandma. He's about it. Starts cutting her up all over her back while she's trying to start the chainsaw. Gets it started. Gets a good cut into Chop Top. He goes tumbling down the stairs. That's the end of it. And Caroline Williams, we now have up top. Going crazy like we saw Sally kind of lose her mind in the original. But she's swinging the chainsaw all over the place, having a good time. And that's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, part two.
And why did they not just continue this story? Like, man, I would have liked to see a...
It was distribution, because it went from Canon to, I think it was New Line, put out Leatherface. And then it went somewhere else for the next generation. It was just one of them that kept getting fucking, you know, it sucks.
It still is, dude. It's all over the place. Like,
oh, no, it's everywhere. But these, I like this sequel a lot. That's great. You know, it's not a perfect movie, but it is a fucking great example of the video nasty era of the 80s and just... For Mosley's performance alone, it's worth the price of admission.
Absolutely.
For Mosley alone, worth the price of admission. So, out of how many Sonny Bono Chop Top wigs do you give the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2?
I give it a solid 4, dude. Like, I can watch this movie over and over, and it's just great. And it's like you said, it's just excess in every imaginable way.
Right. And it's so much fun, though. I don't know how.
It is.
I'm with you. I give it a 4. 4 out of 5. It's one of the, I believe, better. Well, Halloween 2, I really like. Friday the 13th Part 2, which we're going to talk about next week, I think is, well, that was foundational because that introduced the idea of Jason Voorhees. But Chainsaw 2 and even 3, we still got to go back and re-record that episode because I think there's a lot of fun in Chainsaw 3. I remember you when he's fucking kissing them heads and shit up in the swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie stands up really well, and it's canon at its finest. This was canon in its prime, and Canon Films, if you've never really explored that filmography, is just full of fucking gems.
Oh, yeah. If you want to just relive a little bit of it, go watch that Canon documentary, man. That is the best.
What was that called? No, I can't think of it. But yes, the Canon story. And it was really good. Talking about these, it was like Roger Corman and, you know, these guys who were just like, fuck it, dude. Just we're going to make money. We're going to try. I don't know how, but we're going to do it. Okay, so Texas Chainsaw 2, for sure, check that out. You had mentioned earlier that you saw it on Tubi for the win. So yes. If anybody listening can't find it anywhere, it is on Tubi. It's got some really cool cover art too. If you go back and look at the old posters of him breaking through the door, kind of like a Here's Johnny with the chainsaw. Yeah. It's super cool. I believe that was the theatrical, but not sure.
The Breakfast Club cover is great too.
Oh yes, dude. With them all sitting there together. Yeah. I think that's what it's on my VHS is that one. Them all sitting together. So good. So let's move on to our mindful portion of our day. And this one is actually from today. There's this app that I have called the Daily Dharma. And it's just, you know, some insightful shit from a bunch of different people. I can't even pronounce this person's name. I want to say it's a John Cha. I apologize if I butchered that. But the thing from today said, if you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. And if you let go completely, you will have complete peace.
That's beautiful.
Truth, dude. I was talking to my wife about it this morning. I'm like, you just got to let it all go. You have to. And it's, if you would have told me this 5 years ago, I would have been like, shut the fuck up.
Right.
I really would have. It would have been like, shut the fuck up. I don't. And it takes time. But what I told her is now I can't even imagine going back to feeling like that mentally all the time. And a lot of it is just let everything go. And that sounds hard as fuck. But the idea of self, you know, the ego, we talk about the ego a lot, let that go. But even if you could just let a few things go, that's a step in the right direction. And the more you can let go, the more you will find peace. I think because when we hold on to things, we usually want to control those things. We want to control our environment. And then the suffering begins when something doesn't move within our control or how we wanted to control said thing. So now we feel we're suffering. But if you just say, this is exactly what the fuck it is, just accept it. All the siding off the back of my house is fucking gone. It got ripped off in a windstorm.
Oh, no.
But two kids, one kid's got a broken arm right now. One kid's got a broken leg. I just had to have my septic. They came out to pump it and it looks like I need a new tank. So that's going to be like $5,000 there. Another like $6,000-$7,000 into the siding. And there was something else that had just recently happened. Anyway, a whole bunch of things where I looked at and I'm like, I could complain about this shit. I could be miserable. I could be talking to my friends and be like, oh, fuck, dude, my fucking siding. Fuck. Yeah, tell me I should feel bad about this. Where at the end of the day, I'm like, the wind blew all my fucking siding off. I mean, honestly, it's like I can either be pissed about it or I can just be like, yeah, that happened. Start the process of getting it fixed. I don't know. I'll figure it out as it comes. But sit here and be miserable about it would solve nothing. You know, it sucks. Like, yeah, that septic tank is going to cost me fucking $5,000. But it is what it is. I talked to the dude and was like, hey, you think maybe in the fall I'll try and set aside some money? Like, you guys could come out and do that. But so much of our life is like that. And when you can let those things all go away, just go. It doesn't matter. I was talking to Shana this morning. We were taking a shower together and I was talking and I said, there are two things in my life that I know I am going to have to mourn, and that'll be either the loss of her or one of my children and the loss of my mother. When my mother goes, I know I will probably grieve that for a very long time, and that'll be its own thing. But outside of that, fuck it.
Yeah, man.
Really, dude, what's the point? What's the point of carrying around all of that shit that creates suffering?
Yeah, because it's going to happen whether you react to it or not.
Right. And that's the thing, is the only thing we control is our response.
Right.
I can let it be like, oh, I had somebody text me. That's the other big thing that Shayna or just happened to us is some of her accounts somehow got hacked and they had like our banking information. I was having a call. I don't even have a debit card right now. There's no branches in my entire state of my bank because I use Navy Federal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I just don't have a card right now. If there's any fraudulent charges, we'll try and dispute those. I don't know what else to say. And so you're like, hey, let's just figure out how to move forward, because this is the situation. To complain about it would be to deny exactly what it is. This right. is what the fuck it is. So to complain about it would be like, oh, I wish it wasn't this. I wish it wasn't that. No, your reality is right in front of you all day, every day. Your exact reality. And so, yeah, if you want a lot of peace, let a lot go. If you want a little bit of peace, let a little bit of go. You want no peace, hang on to all that shit for your entire life. And you will have no peace. And that sucks. But
if you want a sweet ass peace, buy her flowers. That's from Yawn Anus.
I love you, dude. So for episode 23 of the Horror Pop Extravaganza, I have been Pops Ghostly.
And I've been Yawn Anus.
We will talk to you next week.